Live from Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're going to nerd out a little bit and dive into a scientific breakthrough that dominated headlines this week, a thermonuclear fusion reaction that, simply put, is the same reaction that powers the sun and stars, was reproduced in a laboratory, producing more energy than was used. It's a big deal because, for one, scientists say it's some 60 years in the making, and two, that this opens the doors to advancements in potentially unlimited clean energy. But we're a ways away from that becoming a reality. Nonetheless, it is a historic moment and one that took place in California at Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory, located in the Bay Area, about an hour and a half south of Sacramento, on a good day. Matthias Hohenberger is an experimental scientist at Lawrence Livermore National Lab and group leader working on the project at the National Ignition Facility. Thanks for making the time, Matthias. A big week for you.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. What a wonderful moment and what a pleasure to be here today in this show.
A busy one, but for all the good reasons, after a lot of hard work, this breakthrough, it literally like took off across the world this week. I mean, it brought out White House officials, Congress members, dignitaries, celebrating what is being called one of the most impressive scientific feats of the 21st century. So let's start with the basics, a 101 of sorts. What is fusion and how does it produce energy?
So fusion is kind of the reverse process of fission. People may be familiar with that from nuclear power plants. In fission, you split the atom and you get heat out of it. But it turns out that you can only do that with very heavy atoms. And the reverse thing is true for very light atoms, where when you put two light atoms together, you smash them really hard such that they stick together, you end up getting more energy out. And the reason is that the end product is just a little bit lighter than the sum of the weight of the parts that you put together. And by Einstein's equation, E=mc², that difference in mass is released as energy. It basically means particles move very fast. And so in layman's term, the thing gets hot. And that's the process that releases the energy and it's the fusion. That's what powers the sun.
What made this achievement of fusion ignition so significant? Because scientists have been working on this for decades.
Yes, so it's been something like 60 years or so. We've known about the fusion process itself for 100 years, actually much longer than fission. What is difficult about it is that you need very hot, very dense materials to do this, kind of like the center of the sun. And so that's difficult to make on Earth in a controlled fashion. And so somehow you need to get your material very, very hot. And we're talking hundreds of millions of degrees here, literally. And then you need to keep it hot long enough such that enough of these reactions can take place that you get more energy out than you put in. So in principle, making fusion in the lab is actually easy. We've done it, you know, for decades. But you need to put a lot of energy in to get it hot enough and dense enough. And so what we achieved here just over a week and a half ago is where we used less energy in the system to compress it, to heat it, than we got out at the end. And that's a major milestone. It's been the holy grail of fusion sciences for, you know, decades.
What were the biggest challenges to getting to this moment and achieving a net gain?
This is really the whole project is really a marvel of science and engineering and human ingenuity. It took all these decades to develop the technology that we have today to make the laser system that we use. And so maybe I should describe what it is that we're actually doing. We take literally the biggest laser in the world, the NIF, the National Ignition Facility, and we use this laser to heat the inside of a very small cylinder. It's about half an inch in size. And so that thing in about 10 billionths of a second becomes an incredibly hot oven, something like 3 million degrees. And at the center of that is a small capsule. It's about the size of a peppercorn. And that contains the fuel. That contains the deuterium tritium, which is hydrogen with a few extra neutrons. And so that, because this little oven, the cylinder gets so hot, that little peppercorn gets compressed. And then at the center of that peppercorn, you get a spot that is about a couple of hundred million degrees in temperature. It's about 10,000 times compressed. And that then ignites and creates these reactions. And it's about the size of a human hair. And it becomes, for a moment in time, it becomes the brightest spot on Earth.
It's pretty incredible because this also was conducted at 1 a.m. on December 5th, so in the overnight hours. And when you're talking about that peppercorn, when reading the release from your laboratory, it was they described it as firing 192 powerful lasers onto a BB-size target and producing a net of energy. Could this gain power anything, what you actually produced last week, this reaction?
So the energy that we produced there is not insignificant. So I ride, I have an electric bike, and with the power that with the energy we produced, we could charge up the battery about 2.5 times. So it's, you know, it's a useful amount of energy. But of course, this is it's a research facility. We're not going to connect the NIF to the net. We're not going to produce power to power homes. But also, it's important. And in all fairness, the energy that it took to operate the laser is about 300 megajoules. And we got 3 megajoules out. So we're not actually net producing energy in the grand scheme of things. But it is worth pointing out that the laser technology is about 30 years old. We've made tremendous strides since then. Things have gotten a lot more efficient. And what we demonstrated is that this is possible. The scientific question of, can you get more energy out than you put in? That is what we demonstrated. It works. And so now it's sort of become an optimization problem. And there are many more things that we need to fix here and resolve, but the science works. We've demonstrated that.
Where does this fit into the bigger picture of clean energy and reducing our carbon footprint and climate change?
So, that's a very good question. So in terms of energy production, fusion is, again, sort of a holy grail. It's safe. It has an abundant fuel source, right? It's essentially water. And it doesn't produce any carbon. And it doesn't produce any long-lived radioactive waste that you get from nuclear power plants. So it's really, we cannot see a downside here. And I'm not being sort of hyperbole about that. We cannot see a downside here. But it is very difficult to do. So in the future, of course, we hope that we will have a fusion power plant that will allow us to make safe, abundant, carbon-free energy. But that is still a few years away because, again, there are some technology hurdles that we need to tackle here. And so I think in the short term, we cannot use this as a fix for climate change. Mm.
So what was produced last week was enough to power your electric bike. That is great for you, Mateus. But what would it take in the long run for this really to scale up, as you're saying, and become world changing, like literally a viable clean energy option impacting and benefiting our everyday lives?
So there's a couple of things, and it maybe that goes a little bit beyond my expertise. But so the way the laser operates, we can shoot this every 8-ish hours or so. It's a big facility. It takes a lot of manpower to operate. And so you want to do this at about 10 hertz or so. And then you want to, you know, have the whole infrastructure that you can, essentially boil some water, drive a turbine, and generate electricity that way. And there are many technological hurdles that need to be resolved here. And it's, but I think that will happen. There is already a lot of interest by private industry. There is an initiative by the administration to have a viable prototype for a power plant by the end of the decade. So I think this is going to happen.
There's also a national security component to this, not just clean energy. How does this pave the way for advancements in national defense?
So there's a couple of layers to this. Lawrence Livermore National Lab is a U.S. national lab, so we are tasked with ensuring the safety of the nation. Clean, abundant, safe energy is absolutely part of that portfolio, right? That is something we're absolutely interested in. But the other thing is also we're telling our allies in the world here, we're attracting some of the smartest people in the world, and we're taking some of the biggest problems that you can imagine, and we're solving them. We're fixing it, right? We're doing this, and at the same time, you know, it's telling the our potential adversaries that we know what we're doing. You know, don't mess with us, right? There's certainly work that is directly related to maintaining the nuclear stockpile stewardship. But it's kind of in the nature of the beast, right? The physics at the center of a nuclear weapon are the same as the center of the sun, and it's also the same as the center of of an ignition implosion.
With the hindsight of other energy sources that have been destructive, what are the risks that come with fusion ignition?
So I really don't think that there are risks. As I said, there is no radioactive waste that is being produced. We have in nuclear fission, you generate stuff that has a half-life of sometimes millions of years. That doesn't happen here. And again, it's safe. It sort of shuts itself off. It doesn't have this modus like in a nuclear reaction where things sort of spiral out of control. It cannot do this intrinsically. It's a very different reaction. So I don't think there are any downsides.
Is this being attempted elsewhere in the world?
Oh, yes, absolutely. So, the team that's been working on this is really an international team. We're collaborating with many international companies, institutions, academic partners, industry. But there are also other places in the world where they are building similar laser facilities. And so certainly right now, Livermore National Lab is the only place in the world where you can do this. We're the only ones that have this capability. But, you know, let's say in maybe 10 years or so, there will certainly be very strong competition by other countries as well.
Finally, Matthias, how do you want the general public, non-scientists like myself, to think about what happened and what was achieved this week?
For me, this is absolutely a milestone event. This may be the biggest thing in my entire career, right? It's such a wonderful moment. And I really hope that people see this and get inspired and get excited and maybe even decide to pursue a career in science, because science is one of the amazing tools that we have to fix the big problems that we have in our world. And, you know, this is, if people get excited about it and more people work on this stuff, then we can fix more problems. And I think a great comparison is the Wright brothers moment, the first flight, right? In 1903, the first flight was something like 30 meters, which really isn't particularly useful for anyone, right? But it's the implications of this that changed the world and that, you know, changed society as we know it. And I think that's the same what happened here, right? In and of itself, it's been demonstrated once, fusion ignition, and, you know, it's not particularly useful for anyone outside the science community. But the implications are absolutely enormous.
Matthias, thank you so much for taking the time and congratulations.
Thank you so much for having me.
Matthias Hohenberger is an experimental scientist at Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory and group leader working on fusion at the National Ignition Facility. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.